Good morning. Friday morning. First week is almost over, and the next two will go much faster. I always enjoy these morning chapel messages, and I really miss it when I can't be here. I know I've missed out on a lot already. This morning I want to talk about the impact of our companions. And our companions do definitely leave an impact on us. And I hope in this message we can point out some of the good and some of the dangers of our companionship. I've chosen Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20 as kind of a theme scripture for this message. The wise man Solomon says here, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed." That's quite a statement. When I was a young man growing up, about 16 and 17 years old, I grew up on a dairy farm, and every other day the milkman would come and collect the milk from our tank, and while he was pumping the milk out of the tank, he was just a young married man of this world, and while he was pumping the milk out of the tank, I liked to go down and just visit with him, and we formed a relationship, a friendship, and he was a hunter with bird dogs. He enjoyed hunting birds with dogs. How many of you boys have ever hunted behind a good bird dog? Okay, so you know what it's like, and it's really unique, and it's unusual, and it's intriguing. It's exciting. And so he asked me one day, he said, "Okay, if I bring my bird dogs over and hunt on your farm?" And so sure, I was happy to spend that time with him, hunting behind his dogs. And his dogs were well trained. And a good bird dog, when they get the scent of a bird, they just stop immediately, right in mid-step, and they will point their nose directly at the bird or birds, and gives you time to get your shotgun ready and get all ready, and then you give the dog the command, and he goes in and flushes the birds out, and you get a chance to shoot them. It's just, it's really an interesting experience. Well, that's the kind of dogs he had, and we enjoyed hunting together, and it happened a number of times that he introduced me to this sport. But the other thing that happened is that he also introduced me to some other things that were not so good. Now, he was what society would have considered a good moral man. It was not that he introduced me to immoral things, but he introduced me into an environment that was taking me down. And there was language, there was other things that don't need to be mentioned, but his influence was negative in that way. And when I, a number of years later, became a Christian and gave my heart to the Lord, well, he was one of the men that I had to go back to. The Lord just kept prompting me to go back to him and just testify to him that the Lord had changed my life, because some of the things we did together were ungodly. And again, I say not in the moral realm, but in other areas that I just felt convicted that I need to just testify to him what the Lord had done for me, just to be clear in my own conscience. And of course, it was kind of an uncomfortable moment for him, but for me, it brought peace. And so, when I was about 19 years old, then I moved out here to Missouri, and The church was just small and just getting started, and we had a nice youth group, and all the youth in the youth group were serious-minded young people, or most of them were, and so the companions that I found out here were different than some of those that I had been associating with back in Virginia, where I grew up, and I simply didn't find anyone who was bent in the wrong direction. They were a good influence, and it had a lot to do with my later decision then to give my heart to the Lord, and the pressures and the things that came on me were positive and good, and it had a lot to do with where I am today because of the influence of those companions. And so it can take us either way, and that's the point of the message here this morning. The psalmist also says in Psalm 119:63, he says, I am a companion of all them that fear thee and of them that keep thy precepts. And if you read through the Psalms, you will see over and over again that theme of rejecting bad companionship and seeking out good companionship. And then again in Ecclesiastes, Solomon says that two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not easily broken. And that is the impact or the effect of good companions. And I want to emphasize here the impact that it has on our lives concerning the people that we are around, that we fellowship with, even if it's only as simple as our language, the using of bywords and slang words and things like that. If we're around people who use those kind of things, we will find ourselves after a while doing the same. And that's the kinds of effects that our companions have on us. And so he is saying here that if there are two standing together, two influencing each other in a positive way, when the negative comes, that we will be able to withstand it so much better. And so choose out a good companion. And when the negative comes, it will help us to be victorious. And Jesus says that when the blind lead the blind, they both fall into the ditch. And so if we are walking with blind people, then we will end up finding ourselves in the ditch. Someone has said that those that would be good must keep good company. What is an evidence for them that they would be good? Men's character is known by the company they choose and will be a means of making them good, of showing them the way, of quickening and encouraging them in it. He that would be himself wise must walk with those that are so, must choose such for his intimate acquaintance and converse with them accordingly, must ask and receive instruction from them and keep up good and profitable communication with them. And the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 15, 33 says, be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners. And so just simply saying that choose people that you want to be like, to be your friends. If they're good, they will encourage us in a good direction. If they are not good, it will encourage us in the wrong direction. Hebrews 10:24. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. And that's what good friends do. They build us up. They don't tear us down. Now, there is such a thing as a mob spirit. Here, Wednesday a week ago, our nation saw the results of a mob spirit. I think there were people who ended up in the Capitol building, who ended up there not because they would have done that, except they found themselves in a mob, and the mob was moving in that direction, and it was hard to turn back. They became a part of it, and they now they are seeking out those people. There's a lot of pictures that were taken, and those people who entered into the Capitol unauthorized are being arrested. And I can just imagine the regret in the hearts of some of those people. Why did I do it? That was so dumb. Why did I do it? It's because they were caught in a mob spirit. Have you ever been involved in something that was being done by a group, and later on you look back and you say, why did I do it? That was so dumb. You know, the environment that we find ourselves in and the pressures that come to bear will sometimes take us far beyond what we ourselves would feel comfortable with or that we would consider right. But because everybody else is doing it, we find ourselves right in the middle of it too. I have seen that happen so many times, and I could give you some illustrations that are too current. They might hurt someone, and I won't use them. But it happens, and it happens to good people. People that you never thought would ever do something like that do it because they're in a group that's doing it. So choose your companions very carefully. We have an example in the Bible of the rebellion of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And because of the rebellion of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, there were 250 princes that were burned with fire, that lost their lives. Not only them, but their families, their wives and children as well. Because of the influence of three rebellious men, 250 princes also lost their lives. And their families were destroyed because of the mob spirit. And so those kind of things can get us in trouble. And what it says there in conclusion of that account, he's actually rehearsing it in Numbers 26, and says, the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah. When that company died, what time the fire devoured 250 men, and they became a sign. In other words, they became an example for us. In a situation, a people that we look at and say, I don't want to ever get caught in something like that. And we take an example from it. Also, we have the example of the 12 spies that went into Canaan to spy out the land of Canaan. And they came back again, and they said, it's a wonderful place. There's it's lush, it's beautiful, it's productive, it's fruitful, but there are giants there. And the cities are walled, they have high walls. There's no way we can take this place. And the people began to weep and to cry and to complain. And this is what it says there. It says, and all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness, and wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain, and let us return again to Egypt. And that was because of the influence of 10 men who did not have faith in God. 10 men who said the cities are unconquerable and the giants are much stronger than we are. And they influenced the whole congregation to where they began to cry out and to say, let's go back again to Egypt. They forgot about the taskmasters, the bondage, the slavery, and all the misery they had been in back there because of the influence of these 10 men. But of course, we know that Joshua and Caleb had a different message, and they were the only ones then allowed to enter into the promised land. And then there's a different kind of pressure that comes sometimes. And we have an example of that in the New Testament. And that is found in Matthew chapter 14, when King Herod made a feast for a birthday. And in that celebration and in that partying that was going on there, why, Herodias danced there in front of the people, and Herod was impressed, and he said, called her to him, and he said, ask what you will, and I'll give it to you up to the half of my kingdom. And so she went back to her mother and said, what shall I ask for? What shall I request? And she said, request the head of John the Baptist. Well, it's very clear here that Herod did not really want to kill John the Baptist. He had other plans. It was not his idea to do that, because there were implications that were negative. But he had made this statement in front of the whole group. They were all there, all his friends and the people he invited to this feast all had heard what he said. Now he was under pressure to do something that he would rather not have done. And so he called for John the Baptist and called for him to be executed. He didn't want to be embarrassed in front of his peers. And how many times has that happened to us? We don't want to look different. We don't want to be embarrassed in front of our friends. And so we go along with things that we would rather not do because we don't want to be embarrassed. And then later on, we have the regret. It's better to just suffer that embarrassment and endure the pain and do what is right. Have you ever met someone that you wish you had never have met? Maybe you haven't. You are in a protected environment, and I hope that you're not surrounded with those kind of people or encounter them. But I have. There are people in my life that I wished I would have never met. And the reason was that there's a relationship between the people we run around with and the deepest regrets that we have. We tend to do things in groups or in pairs or together. And there's a pressure that comes when we are together that is not there so much sometimes when we're alone. Sometimes it's easier to commit sins alone too, but a lot of the regrets that we have come because of the people that we're around. And the proverb writer says, forsake the foolish and live, and go in the way of understanding. I don't know what your deepest regrets are, but I would venture to say that they happened when you were with someone and not just alone. Our greatest regrets often involve people. And it's not people who are our enemies, but people who are close to us, our friends. Our greatest regrets are usually connected with people we would consider friends. Now, I'm going to use the metaphor here of a guardrail. A guardrail is a system designed to help keep vehicles from straying into dangerous or off-limit areas. And this morning on the way to Bible school here, we were traveling a road that didn't have guardrails, and in some places it would have been nice if they would have been there. It would have been kind of reassuring. Because guardrails are not placed in the danger zone. They're placed in the safe area. They keep us out of danger. And guardrails are designed to minimize damage. It's better to bump into a guardrail than it is to go down over the bank and over the cliff or whatever might be on the other side. Worldly culture or the society around us doesn't like absolutes. Worldly culture is happy with erasable lines and gray areas, where you don't just establish a boundary and say, I'm not crossing over that. But we need guardrails in our relationships. And that's what I'm addressing now. There's other areas we need guardrails in as well. There are the people that we spend time with. When we're with certain friends, we tend to let down our guard and get into things that we later regret. Guardrails in relationships are about good judgment. Good judgment is about drawing conclusions about my life and how I should act. Good judgment is drawing conclusions about ourselves based on wisdom, based on our past experience, based on our present situation and the future. It's about me looking at me and deciding what I can be, what I should be, and what I want to be. And if you are setting a high ideal for what you want to be, then you need to be paying attention to who you associate with. Who we spend our time with is important. And why is it important? Because our friends determine the direction and the quality of our lives. The same thing that makes friendships wonderful can also make them dangerous. We tend to drop our guard with our friends. We crave acceptance. And this leaves us open to being influenced because we don't want to be rejected or left out or be the oddball. We want acceptance. We want to fit in. And, you know, you may not be aware of this or think about it that much, but we are an acceptance magnet. We really, to be accepted is quite important to us, and we want to be accepted, and we're drawn to people and places where we feel accepted. And so we have to be on guard because it is not always a good thing. When we want to be accepted, we may find ourselves in the wrong crowd. There's a study that's been done in Northwestern University by a man by the name of Moran Cherf. And this is what he found in this study. He found that when two people are in each other's company, their brain waves will begin to look nearly the same. It's not just behavioral. When you spend time with people, you begin to think like them and become like them, and your brain waves reflect that. He goes on to say that just being next to some people actually aligns your brains with them. So maybe you should look to your right and to your left. Do you want to be like the person you're sitting beside? He says that when the people that are next to us, our brain waves began to actually follow the same direction. And he goes on to say then that if people want to maximize happiness, they should surround themselves with people who embody the traits that they prefer. Why? Because you begin to think like them and to feel like them. It's neurological. So when your mother said, I don't want you to be around those people, she said that because she didn't want you to become like them. If they were a bad example. And I want to qualify that in a little bit. Again, going back to our theme verse here, 3,000 years ago, the wise man Solomon said something like this, "Wisdom is contagious. Do life with wise people, and you will be wise." That's what that verse basically is saying. A wise person is someone who understands that life is connected. A wise person understands that today's decisions are connected to tomorrow's outcome. And what you want to be like tomorrow or in the future is affected by what you do today and your choices today, especially in relationships. Then there is the other part of this. The Bible definition of a fool was someone who did not live carefully. They do not connect the dots, nor do they understand that yesterday impacts them today, and what they do today impacts tomorrow and their future. And so a fool is someone who just lives for today. And, if you're around people like that who are just out for a blast and for a good time today and for having fun today without thought of where this is going to take us, how this is going to impact my future. And, God has his hand on us. God has a plan for you, each one of you individually. God has something in mind for you. And I just thank the Lord for his protecting hand over me when I was under the influence of this worldly man and other friends that I had that was not good, that God delivered me in spite of my bad choices at that time. And he gave me the opportunity to turn that around and to dedicate my life to him completely and to go back and to make those things right with those old friends. And God had a plan, and it was so much better than what I would have found if I would have continued in that direction. He says, you would expect that Solomon would say that if you live the life of a fool, you will become a fool, but that's not what he says. He says, live life with fools and you will get in trouble. You will be destroyed. That plan that God has for you will never be realized because you continue to walk with people that are not a good influence. And that's the wonderful thing about Bible school. I hope you don't find anyone here that would influence you in the wrong direction. I hope that everyone that is here because you want to draw closer to God. You want to prepare yourselves for a life of fruitfulness and to build his kingdom. We're depending on you. You are the next generation behind us. And we need you. God needs you, and he has a plan for you. Help him to realize that plan by choosing right companionship, that you would not be destroyed. A fool knows what's right, but he doesn't care enough to change. The issue is how close we stand around people we don't need to be around. The issue is proximity. As they go, you go. When things go bad for them, you have a great chance that things will go bad for you too. Those people that are being arrested there for entering the Capitol building, it's not going good for them. And those that joined them and entered in beside them, it's not going good for them either, even though they would not have instigated it on their own. If you hang out with friends who aren't careful with their lives, they will not be careful with you and with your life. Friends who don't take care of themselves will not take care of you. Friends who lie, cheat, and steal feel better if you also lie, cheat, and steal. Friends who don't mind abusing their bodies won't mind if you abuse yours with tobacco and drink and whatever. Friends who break the law won't confront you about breaking the law. Friends can be dangerous, so you need to establish a guardrail that informs your conscience so that when you start to veer off, the lights come on. I had an experience in Bible school when I was just 18 years old, just like many of you are. And I was then attending a Bible school, and that was before I made a commitment to Christ, and I was struggling, and yet I wanted to do what was right, but I didn't have the power to do it because I wasn't walking in the Spirit. And so there were some boys that came to Bible school that were in the same shape I was in, except maybe, I don't know, we always like to think other people are worse. But they invited me to go with them shopping one afternoon when we had a free period. So we went shopping and we went into the store. And before I knew it, they were planning to do some shoplifting. And which is, of course, stealing. You just call it shoplifting. It sounds a little better. And they said, you stand here and watch. And if someone comes, you let us know. And so they shoplifted one of these little $5 Timex watches at that time. And there I was, all of a sudden I was caught into something I would, you know, I even though I wasn't what I should have been, I would not have stole. It was that stooping pretty low to steal. And but there I was, all of a sudden, under the pressure of the moment and caught in it, and I became complicit with shoplifting. Well, it went a couple years, and the Lord, after I became a Christian, the Lord kept prompting me about this, and I was just as guilty as they were because I knew what they were doing, and I became complicit in it. And so one day when I was in that area, I just decided I'm going to go, and I went in, and I asked for the manager, and I told him what we did, and I paid the amount of the cost of that watch that was taken, and I apologized to him. Even though I didn't actually do it myself, I felt responsible, and I didn't get peace until I took care of it. And so, and that's what I say, friends can be dangerous, so we need to establish a guardrail that informs our conscience that when you start to veer off, the lights come on. I should have had enough courage to say, hey, I'm not going along with this. But I didn't at that time. And I didn't get peace about it until I went back and made it right. Remember, the point of a guardrail is to light up our conscience before we veer into the danger zone. And so I want to encourage you to consider that before you veer off into the danger zone. And that comes in when you are choosing your companions. I should have, knowing the character of these young fellows, I should have said, no, I don't think I want to go along with you. And I could have avoided that whole scenario. You need to rethink your core group of friends. You may think that your friends don't lead you, but they do. Your conscience should light up when you catch yourself pretending to be someone other than who you are. You catch yourself agreeing with your friends, but you really don't. You feel pressure to be and act like someone you are not, or you don't want to be. When you catch yourself agreeing with something on the outside that deep down you disagree with, it should be a stop sign for you. When this happens, reconsider your friends. Your conscience should light up when you feel pressure to compromise. Not once you have compromised and run off into the ditch. When something that wasn't a big temptation becomes one, it should light up your conscience. When something that has never been a temptation, something you said no to when you faced it, now you catch yourself going, well, maybe. Something, when it becomes in our heart and in our mind, a live option, a real consideration, it should light up our conscience. Maybe we should rethink it. You want to rethink it because you cross the line into the danger zone. Your conscience should light up when you catch yourself thinking, I'll go, but I won't participate. Have you ever found yourself in that situation? I'll go, but I won't be a part of it. When you start having that conversation in your head, it should bother your conscience. You're bumping up against a guardrail. No damage done yet, but it's there, a flag, a red flag going up. Your conscience should light up when you hope the people you care about don't know where you are and what you're doing. And finally, the society around us, the culture we live in, will say, oh, come on, it doesn't matter. It's a little thing, or it's not that bad. Tomorrow, you may wake up and you might look in the mirror and you might ask yourself, how did I get here? Why did I do it? Whose life is this after all? Is this me? Have you ever woke up and asked yourself that question? I have. Our friends still determine the direction and the quality of our lives. It's why you and I need guardrails. Jesus said something significant about this when he was speaking to a group of people who always had to have the last word, always countered his teaching. No matter what he said, they would have an argument against it. And one day Jesus made a powerful statement there. We find that in Luke 7:35, where it says, "But wisdom is justified of all her children." And what that actually means is that wisdom is shown to be right by the lives of those who follow it. To really know wisdom, you see it in action. Jesus' point here is that wisdom is proved right not in the debate, not in the argument, but in the outcome. Eventually, we reap what we sow. Establishing personal guardrails when it comes to our friends is not a lack of concern for other people. And this is the qualifying statement I want to make. It's not a lack of love for other people. It's not about other people. It's about you. It's about your future. It's about your hopes and dreams, your future marriage partner, and your ideals. When it comes to helping other people, when you remain in the safe zone, you are better able to help your friends when they cross the lines than you are if you cross the line with them. When the results of their decisions come back to show up in their relationships and families, you're in a position to help them. Jesus is right. Wisdom is proved right by the lives of those who follow it. Walk with the wise and become wise. And finally, Ephesians 5:15-17, Paul says, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is." May God help you in your relationships. Friendships are precious. They are valuable. They are a part of our lives. We don't want to be a recluse, but we need to choose our friends carefully because our future depends on our relationships, or is impacted, I should say, by our relationships. Shall we stand to pray? Our loving Father, Lord, we thank you this morning that we could gather in this way, and I thank you for every one of the youth present here and all the teachers and administration. Lord, in this great work of the Bible school and of just studying your word and being impacted by relationships that are formed and hopefully relationships that will be a blessing to each one for years to come. And Lord, help us to choose those relationships carefully and help us to be the kind of friend that will build up our friends and not to take them down. That will be an encouragement and help us to be able and to admonish one another and to receive admonishment and to grow and to be wise. And Lord, I just pray for this day as we enter into the studies again today, that it can be a time of blessing. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. You may be seated.